turns from present in the past. Every week will be an animated bash. What a cartoon! What a cartoon! Maybe a short but mostly sharp. We'll talk, we'll analyze, exploring as we go. What a cartoon!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to What a Cartoon Movie, where all cops are cuties. I'm one of your hosts, the part-time popsicle hustler, Bob Mackie, and this is an audio exploration of every animated movie ever. Who is here with me today, as always?
Leaving Clawhauser's DMs on red, Henry Gilbert.
And this month's movie is Zootopia.
Everyone comes to Zootopia thinking they can be anything they want. Well, you can't. You can only be what you are. Sly Fox, Dumb Bunny.
And yes, we are continuing our summer of 2010's Disney series on What a Cartoon Movie. So previously we covered Winnie the Pooh in May, Wreck-It Ralph in June, and now we are zooming ahead to Zootopia for July, and then back in time for Big Hero 6 in August, because we take turns producing these, and Henry is our superhero man.
Yes, yeah, it's technically a Marvel film, and I mean, it's got Stan Lee in it, so it definitely counts. So I was like, no, Bob, I got to do that. Well, meanwhile, Bob has slowly become a furry, more so as the series, our podcast has gone on.
Oh, we're going to talk about who's becoming a furry between the two of us very soon here. So yes, we are covering Zootopia, the 2016 animated film that made over $1 billion. Very popular. The sequel, which came out last year, is the most popular non-Chinese animated feature of all time. So Zootopia, it's a huge franchise, and this is our first time covering it. So Henry, what is your experience with the Zootopia film? And also, how close are you to fully coming out as a furry? I have some smoking guns I want to talk about here. The audience needs to know about them. And one of them was up front, actually, in the intro.
Yes, I thought it would be funny in my letterbox review to mention that, like, okay, look, do I like Clawhauser? It's funny. It's funny.
Yeah, funny. I've got a funny boner here.
No, I like, since the first viewing, like, Clawhauser was my favorite guy. The heavy set police receptionist, I guess you'd call him. There's probably a more masculine title for that. But look, yes, I think over time, have I looked at furry porn at some point? Perhaps.
Okay, that's this, it. That's it. Yes. That's all you need. Okay.
In my defense, too, if you're looking in queer corners of porn, like, that's where a lot of furry guys, it turns out I just end up like, oh, every gay guy I follow has a fursona. Is this just what it's turning into now? Like, so I feel like I accidentally got into it.
Henry, we welcome you. You are appreciated. You are loved, but I'll still make jokes about it.
Okay. All right.
Especially because in your Letterboxd review, you implied that you would like Clawhauser to manipulate your genitals to completion, perhaps over the jeans.
I said mostly hand stuff. Yes, that's a fun way to put it.
This is a children's movie.
These are adult characters I'm talking about.
I mean, there's the nudist camp scene. These things don't have genitals or anuses. I don't know what you plan on doing, but you're going to be rubbing up against a smooth bump.
That is true, yes. We learned they don't have genitals in this. A quick aside, too. It was funny at the last. I'm not at, like, understanding fursuits. Well, look, I can understand it, I'm sure. It's like, I'm not like, why would somebody do this? I think I get it, but...
Listen, I've been studying furries for a long time. I have two friends that are furries. I'm completely fine with the lifestyle. I appreciate it and their devotion. There's a spectrum. You don't need to jump into the fursuit. That's for, like, the advanced classes. You can just appreciate anthro characters or artwork. And in some cases, it doesn't even need to have a sexual element. You can just appreciate, like, oh, I like animal people designs.
At the Seattle Pride Parade, my husband and I remarked that we were seeing just as many people in the fur suit, full suit, like mascot style fursuit. We saw as many of them as naked people. Like, I think we saw like 8 naked people and 8 fursuits. Like that. Mm. So the most uncomfortable and probably the most comfortable, perhaps.
So what are we talking about, Zootopia?
Yes, no, sorry. Yeah, I just, and my husband also pointed out to me, like, when you see people in those, it's the same kind of statement of driving a fancy car. That is a very rich person in those, or at least like a millionaire programmer in the Seattle area, a millionaire tech guy is in that.
I wonder if they've got those air conditioned suits.
Chewbacca's outfit on the set would wear, perhaps.
The Ninja Turtles after the first movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're getting into the fursuit community here because we are talking about, like, the number one furriest... It's certainly inspired a lot of furry porn, as I'm sure.
Yeah, this movie launched 1,000 furry ships. And then 30 years before it was Rescue Rangers.
Yes, and 20 years before that, the Robin Hood film that Disney put out. My history, though. Yes, sorry. I believe I watched this not in theaters, but within 2 years while flying somewhere on a long flight, I gave it a watch. I think when it was on Netflix right before like Disney Plus launched, Disney put a bunch of stuff on Netflix to test the waters. And I watched it. And yeah, it was... I can't imagine how this felt watching it like in the year of 2016, in the year that never ends of 2016. But I reflected on it as a very 2016 late Obama era film. Over time, as it's been like more obvious how horrible cops are, like it's more annoying on that level. But dang it, if it's not still a good, funny little movie about silly animals solving mysteries.
Yeah, in terms of what it's saying and its themes and what it's playing with, it came out at the last possible time it could have. So I'm interested in seeing the sequel to find out how they deal with these themes now that there's been different conversations about them. As for me, unfortunately, 2016 is kind of a lost year for me. I don't know what I was doing, but somehow I was able to make 3,000 podcasts because I had a full-time job. I had Retronauts. I had Talking Simpsons. I was doing guest appearances on top of that. I was doing a regular freelance comedy writing job. I'm still alive, and I'm glad I'm not having that same work schedule, but I was seeing no movies. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I saw a single movie in a movie theater in 2016. It's likely that I did not.
Wow.
But I... Yeah, I mean, that was just my life, like living podcast, breathing podcast, and only partaking in video games because that was my job. So I wanted to be as up on video games as possible. So I was not really going out to the theater. Missed Zootopia entirely, knew it had good buzz. And I guess ignorantly, I saw the poster and I was very underwhelmed because I thought, okay, what's the pitch here? Animals talk? We've seen this and I don't understand why it's so popular. But yeah. That was my take on it. And I thought for the longest time it was based on a book series, but I was also thinking of Dinotopia, which is completely unrelated. So I plead pure ignorance on this. And then I eventually found out what it's about. I found out it has a nice message. And then I saw it for this podcast and I gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd. And I like it because here's the thing. I love cop media. I love procedurals. I love crime stories. I know the reality of the situation, but here's the thing. Superheroes, they're all cops. RoboCop's a cop. And if you feel bad for Alex Murphy, he's a cop. You should want him to suffer.
If you're not rooting for Alex Boddicker, you're not an ally to the anti-cop.
Yes, yes, he's the hero of that movie. But yes, I can get over that because I know, like, I love the procedural nature of this story and other stories like it. I love the mystery element, and I'm willing to understand, like, yes, this is fiction, and things would be very different. But we're living in animal world, and things are obviously very different for many different reasons. So we'll talk about how this movie has aged poorly. I don't want that to bog down our discussion. But yes, since this movie has entered our world, a certain guy was elected president twice. Racism and prejudice, they're not as easy or over as we thought they were. And it turns out we're talking about cops again, or at least we were for a while. So yeah, there's a lot of baggage this movie has, and again, it came out at the last possible time, and I will say, hand on my iPhone, I am not a furry. I'm swearing to God, I'm not a furry. I do like animal characters, though, and whenever something has animal characters, I'm immediately more interested because I love animals, and I don't eat them, by the way, and also, I just like how they're designed more than people. I feel like they're better, they're more fun to watch than a cast of people characters, so I shouldn't have scoffed at this, like, oh, talking animals. No, I like talking animals. There's not enough of them.
the talking animals just are cute. A talking animal cartoon is usually used as a dismissive, or sometimes used in the animation field to denote, like, a less serious cartoon. It's used as a negative, like, oh, you're just another funny animal cartoon. But this one, my favorite thing on rewatch, other than... I also enjoy a police procedural. I've watched 800 episodes of Law and Order, but it also is they found every possible joke they could do with every animal. Like, they really, I felt like the gag writing system in it worked very well. They worked real hard in it too.
Yes, and I mean, we'll get to it, but that's exactly why John Lasseter approved this movie. It's exactly what A Bug's Life and Finding Nemo and Cars is all about, where it's like, all right, it's the world of blank. What are all the jokes that come from that?
Exactly. Like, it's not very far removed from the things that made Flintstones or Jetsons exist. Of like, well, okay, it's the Flintstones. What's every joke you can have of like, well, what if you, well, a caveman did a thing that a regular person does? Here it is. Well, what if a giraffe had to have a car? What would that look like?
And then you can also dust off a 20 to 25-year-old Godfather parody that was like on Animaniacs.
Yes, yeah, quite a rather hairy and old one, except yeah. Except you get to play with scale, too.
And also, yeah, Maurice LaMarche is doing the impression of Marlon Brando. So you're basically just watching a little critic segment at that point.
from a co-director of The Critic, so
that's
true. Co-director of the movie, yeah.
He has permission. So yes, that's our experience with Zootopia. Before we go on to the history of Zootopia, let's talk about our wonderful Patreon at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. Which brings you these many lovely programs like What a Cartoon Movie. So if you are on the free feed or the $5 feed, you'll hear a portion of the history. But if you want to hear the rest of the history in our entire movie discussion segment, head on over to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. Go there, sign up for $10 a month. When you do, you'll hear the rest of this podcast and then nearly 8 years worth of What a Cartoon Movie podcast. We've covered many Disney films, many Pixar films, everything from the Disney Renaissance, all the Toy Story movies. We've been covering a movie a month for, again, almost 8 years. So that's nearly 100 episodes of What a Cartoon Movie, and they're all between 3 to 6 hours long. So if you want to hear the rest of this and immediately access, 1,000 hours more, just go to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. And there is the $10 level that gets you the $5 stuff too. Henry, what does the $5 stuff include?
That gives you early ad-free podcasts of the free ones that we normally put out of Talking Simpsons and regular What a Cartoon. And you also get a monthly episode of Talking Futurama and a monthly episode of Talk King of the Hill, where we go into Futurama and King of the Hill, super in-depth as well. We're past 100 episodes on Futurama, nearing 100 episodes of King of the Hill. We've also covered every episode of The Critic, Mission Hill, and many of our favorite episodes of Batman the Animated Series. If you sign up at the $10 level, you get all of that too, and the rest of this podcast. And if you're looking for an extra deal, if you sign up at the annual subscription level, you get a 10% discount for that annual fee. It's 10% less than if you went month to month. So consider that when you head to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons.
Again, if you want to support us, if you want ad-free stuff, and if you want to support creators who are against AI,
mm-hmm.
Everything is moving in that direction. We are standing strong. Go to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. Let's talk about the history of Zootopia, everybody. So thankfully, this is a fairly recent movie. It's only 10 years old. It's been the longest 10 years of all of our lives, but that's still only a decade. There's a lot to find out there. And most of the articles written about Zootopia are still online, albeit via Internet Archive. Try finding anything posted in 2016 that's still online naturally. You won't. But thankfully, the Internet Archive saves a lot of these things. So I got the Blu-ray out of the library. There are a few nice extras, but I will say, disappointed there is no commentary. If your movie makes over $1 billion and is that culturally relevant, you should be forced by the government to make a commentary track. But unfortunately, we don't have that, and it's a real damn shame.
And I know guys like Rich Moore and Jim Reardon, they love doing commentary tracks. I feel, well, for Disney, maybe it's that they feel like a kid's movie, if they just see their Blu-rays or even 4Ks as, oh, this is just for kids to put on. They're not going to care about any like a commentary. They see it as an adult feature not worth bothering with. But every person who works on these movies would do 2 hours of commentary for them for free. Like, it would it would be such an easy thing. But yeah, that is disappointing to hear no commentary.
Yeah, it's crazy there's no commentary for this or Frozen. There's not even any extras on the Frozen Blu-ray. Go back to our Frozen podcast. The only extra is a joke about how they didn't bother finding out how they made Frozen. It's an entire song about how did we make Frozen? And the last lyric is, we don't know. And then the extra is over, and you're left feeling kind of sad.
Wreck-It Ralph had a good making of a little featurette that was under 30 minutes that was not full of star-studded interviews, which I appreciated. They actually talked to all the people who made it, but that and some deleted scenes were kind of it on even the 4K release of Wreck-It Ralph. So yeah, no commentary there either. I expect when Simpsons people who do DVD commentaries do anything new that they also do DVD commentaries there, and I'm always disappointed.
Yes, it's a damn shame, but that's why we're here, to fill the gap, the information gap. So Wreck-It Ralph was not that far away compared to Zootopia. And we all lived through this era, so we don't really need to go too deep into where Disney was. But I want to give a reminder in three simple words, and that is complete cultural hegemony. That's where Disney is in 2016, because here's where they are. They're currently trying to recapture this era, and they never will. So Frozen is a hit. Star Wars is back. The MCU is cooking. Pixar is churning out hit after hit. Even The Good Dinosaur makes money. So Disney is on the upswing. And then they are until 2019, which is one of their best years on record, if not the best year, because 2019 brings us Endgame, The Rise of Skywalker, Frozen 2, Toy Story 4, The Lion King remake, The Aladdin remake, Disney Plus, and a bunch of other things I'm forgetting. Disney would kill you and your grandmother if they could have 2019 back, and they might. Don't push them.
They're on their way to it. Yeah, they or they'll at the very least lay off whoever they need to get that done. All yeah, 2016. Yeah, when you put it that way, they're just after the release in the Christmas season of 2015 of The Force Awakens, and then this comes out in March, and then I believe a month later is Captain America Civil War, which like begins the phase three that makes them like $8 billion, I think, just those Marvel movies. Yeah.
When Zootopia hits theaters in March, The Force Awakens is still in theaters. It's that popular.
Yeah, I probably walked by the things showing Zootopia as well when I went to go see Captain America Civil War, you know, bouncing up and down, so excited that Spider-Man was going to be hanging out with all the other toys. And I was rarely more happy in a movie theater than seeing Spider-Man hang out with the Avengers. I can't lie. I cannot lie.
So let's talk about Zootopia. Now, talking animals who sometimes sing used to be Disney's bread and butter, of course. But over the years, animals were really relegated to sidekick roles. As the studio's animated movies moved more into the CGI realm, they focused more and more on humans. And I think it's the real reason is because technological limitations. It is hard to depict things like fur and hair. So we're getting movies about cars and fish and bugs and superheroes that don't look superhuman. So we are not quite ready for fuzzy animals. There's a few technical test cases they trot out, like hey, the dog in Toy Story 2, right?
Yeah.
And a few things along the way. But Disney still not very comfortable with an entire cast of furry animals. The technology is not quite there yet.
I mean, just look a decade back of from this film's release, and you've got Chicken Little, which we covered. Like, that shows you how they could animate animals there, and there's very few furry characters in that. It's feathery characters or pig characters. Like, I'm actually stretching my brain to think of too many actual, like, furry guys in Chicken Little.
I think, like, Foxy Loxy, the Amy Sedaris character, is the one furry character, but the fur is on a whole different level in that movie. But you could tell they are insecure. They're not confident about their ability to portray fur in CGI. And this is where Bolt director Byron Howard enters the picture. So he recognizes that these animal characters have taken a backseat in recent decades, and he wants to make a furry-focused feature, something in the vein of Disney's 1973 film Robin Hood. So Lasseter's in charge, John Lasseter, of course. Howard pitches him six different animal-focused ideas, including an all-animal adaptation of The Three Musketeers and a story about a bounty hunter pug in space. But ultimately, Howard wanted to make a movie that was really up Lasseter's alley, and the intent for this project was to depict a world designed for animals and by animals. And the working idea for this project was, quote-unquote, animals in clothing. That was the idea behind it, because Robin Hood was really the last time they did this. There's things like The Great Mouse Detective and Oliver and Company where, yeah, animals are in clothing, but they're also in a human world. He wanted a world where it just happens to be populated by animals. They don't coexist with humans. They're not living amongst humans. It is just pure animal world.
That was very interesting when we did Great Mouse Detective, that in that universe, and hey, there's going to be a lot of like questioning universe commentary I'll be giving on this one, I think, but in that one, rats and mice live among us, but they also imitate us and like are kind of our little homunculus next to us too. That's a funny concept.
Yeah, like you have a little mouse that's just like you, and he's podcasting in a hole in your wall in the Great Mouse Detective.
Also, that pug in space thing, that's a funny idea, because I was just double checking this, that Rebecca Sugar, one of their early comics before, like, creator-owned comics before they got into the world of animation, Rebecca Sugar created the character Pug Davis, which was like a pug animal man astronaut as well. That it only got published recently, but I believe Rebecca was working on it back like in like the aughts, like in like 09 or something.
I mean, hey, pugs are funny. They can barely breathe. So what if one was in space? It'd be a disaster.
It's already hard enough to breathe there.
Mm-hmm. So according to Byron Howard, upon hearing the whole animals in clothing pitch, Lasseter lifted him into the air, quote unquote, like a baby Simba. And I will say, Mr. Police, he gave you all the clues.
Yes, yes.
He's hugging everybody. He's touching everybody. He's hugging everybody. These are like lighthearted stories about him before the cancellation, in quotes. He was not canceled. He just had to form another billion-dollar company somewhere else.
It's funny that 1 or 2 years later, these kind of like stories are not the cute stories they are presented as in a 2016. I'm assuming this story came out in like, it was told in 2016 about Lasseter doing that.
It's like, isn't it funny how he grabbed me? Not really. Not anymore.
Again, if the election had gone a different way, if Hillary Clinton had campaigned better in some states, John Lasseter would probably still be running Disney, I would think. He wouldn't have changed anything about himself in any way and still would be making people uncomfortable, but he wouldn't have lost his job, probably.
It could be, yes. So one of Howard's pitches had a 1960s theme similar to The Incredibles. So Lasseter suggested he combine this idea with one of his other pitches, the animal world pitch. And this is when he came up with Savage Seas, which is a spy film about a James Bond-style Arctic hare named Jack Savage. This is when Jared Bush joins the project, and he's ultimately credited as being co-writer with Phil Johnston. And apparently he was excited to work on this because he comes from a CIA family, so we know how he got his job at Disney.
I see, man. Oh, boy. That's
look for the anti-communist propaganda in Zootopia. It's there.
That is funny. Yes, it is like all these people who like they used to be part of the CIA or like they're in the CIA family. It's like if somebody probably would be questioned if they got a job at Disney, if they were always talking about like Maoist ideology, if they were they were openly that, they'd probably be questioned and not given too much access. CIA, though, whatever.
Not questioned in any way. So Bush and Howard developed Savage Seas within Disney, but ultimately the most fun part of the film ends up being the first act, which takes place within that Zootopia-style city, and that's what they decide to focus on entirely. The spy in the 60s angle is tossed out entirely, so now all they have is the idea of like an animal city. What happens there? Run with it. John Lasseter says, figure out like something that can happen in this world because the idea of the world is fascinating enough. And hey, he was right. People showed up for Zootopia based on the idea, based on the poster, animals having fun in an animal city. They didn't know what the movie was about.
Just look at all these animals in a city. Look at that. Like I also think it had one of the most like successful trailers ever. Like it was an omnipresent trailer that I would see. When I say that, I mean, I saw that teaser of the DMV scene many times in theaters.
Oh, me too. Yes, yeah. I think I just saw it on like ads and stuff. But I thought, is this the Sloth movie? And then when I eventually see this film like last week, I'm like, oh, the Sloth stuff is great. I was wrong to think they were overplaying the Sloth stuff.
Yep. Yeah, they are funny. They were right. The marketing team was right to lead with that joke as their main ad campaign.
So they don't know what they're going to do with these animals. So they're sent out to study animals, like look at animals, see how they act. Go to places like Disney's Animal Kingdom and San Diego Zoo Safari Park. Observe them. Think of ideas. Think of characters. So they're essentially just like sent off into the wilderness to figure out what Zootopia is. And they actually go to a wildlife reserve in Kenya. And this is where they dawn upon their biggest idea for Zootopia because they're observing a watering hole and they're noticing predators and prey are drinking the water together while eyeing each other suspiciously. So they're all here for the same thing, but they have an uncomfortable relationship with each other. Boom. That's your idea for Zootopia. Let's take this predator-prey relationship and move it into a more civilized world and see the tensions that evolve from that. And perhaps we can tell a story about prejudice or bias or microaggressions and things like that. The very 2010s Obama 2 kind of climate. Those are the things we're talking about.
Yeah, that's so funny. They see the we all want to go to a watering hole together, but we're all also kind of suspicious of each other. I guess the film reminded me too of the in Avenue Q. There's a song, and Avenue Q is written by future Frozen songwriters, so it's worth bringing up. But that in Avenue Q, they have the song "Everyone's a Little Bit Racist," which is a very of its time thing of like, well, you know, you're not hateful, but everybody has a little racist thought every now and then, right? Like that was, and I was thinking that song in several scenes of this movie. Well, yes,
yeah. Yes, the people. I mean, it's we'll talk about it. Throughout, I wanted to bog down our conversation, but ultimately my take is this message doesn't really work because you're talking about don't have biases, don't have prejudice, but then all the jokes come from animals acting in very stereotypical ways, rather. And then if you think about the predator-prey relationship and how predators are discriminated against and feared and everything, well, and if you translate that to the real world, well, predators are white people and we're not a discriminated class.
Yes. Yeah,
perhaps we should be. I mean, sure. Put the shock collar on me. But if it's like, who are the people that tormented us the most in the past? It's white people. But if you translate that to the real world, that doesn't really make any sense. It doesn't really check out.
You also start to question the more they engage with it on like America's own specifically racist tendencies, especially with African-American communities. Then it makes you also question like this should have a more black cast, people of color in roles and writing and directing. Probably.
You can say African-American, but I don't think they're checking to see where the lineage comes from.
No, that is true. Yeah, we're generally an extremely racist place. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. but again, I don't want to be like that wouldn't happen like that in real life, man.
Yes,
because it's a movie for children. But ultimately, this allegory doesn't really work. But you kind of have to give it a grain of salt and remember when it was made and give it a lot of forgiveness there, because it is like this is like the final year where we thought we were living in a post-racial society, or we were at least approaching that. And clearly the last decade has taught us that's not happening. That's not the case.
Mm-hmm. If ever we were close to it, we probably just tricked ourselves. But yes, back to that scene that they saw all of the animals drinking together. That's pretty cool that that's where they're vision came together and doing the thing we heard about, like when we covered The Lion King or Bambi, of just the animators just looking at animals and figuring out what they do and like just reflecting on real life to try to come up with like a story or even jokes.
And a big challenge for them was to retain the unique way all these animals moved while also anthropomorphizing them. So how do we retain the essential nature of an elephant or a gazelle or a wildebeest or a fox? But they're walking around in clothing. Like, how do we do that? That was a challenge. And also, something I think this movie does that is very unique is the fact that it keeps the scale of everything. It doesn't cheat. Like, you have to cheat with movies like Robin Hood, where, well, it's like a bear is as big as a goose or whatever. Like, everything is, like, around the same size just for the sake of framing and making the story easier to tell. But here, it's like, no, Judy is the size of a rabbit compared to a water buffalo who is her boss. And the different areas of the city are built based on the size of the animals who live there. And we see that when she's like rampaging through Gerbil Town or Hamster World or whatever, things are much smaller there.
Yeah, in Robin Hood is a good example that in that one, Little John is a bear, and that's fine. Like, he is to scale the way a bear should be. But when they want the Sheriff of Nottingham to be like a threat, well, he's like a wolf, but he's bigger than a bear. And a bear is not bigger than a wolf, but he needs to. Same with like a giant chicken lady is Maid Marian's female attendant, whose name I forget in Robin Hood history. So apologies.
We'll get to it when we cover Robin Hood, which I've never seen Robin Hood. I know it's very important to the furry community.
Well, I saw it, but as an innocent child.
You didn't know what it was doing to your brain. That's why you are the way you are now, Henry.
I have met a friend who, seeing Little John / Baloo in cartoons as a kid, did activate them.
That's what we did the Naked Baloo episode of Tailspin when we covered it for What a Cartoon.
I had no clue that was coming in that episode.
Something about this episode really spoke to me. Oh, it's Baloo with his shirt off.
It is very weird in that episode, but...
So they have this idea based on the watering hole, and they look at real life statistics and they see, okay, in general, prey outnumber predators 10-1 just based on the fact that they need to be eaten. That's how the world is designed. They are the food for the bigger creatures who reproduce less. And they thought, okay, what would happen in a world where the prey was in charge and the predators could not eat them? And that is where the general idea of Zootopia comes from. And ultimately, They settle on the idea of a buddy cop movie that would also be a police procedural that is about two characters solving a mystery. And this is not an original premise. There have been so many buddy cop movies. It's a very tired premise. But animated movies really never take on this premise. The only other one I can think of before this is Osmosis Jones. And I did a hard search on this. I feel like it was Osmosis Jones and then Zootopia and then Zootopia 2. They're not making buddy cop animated movies. And it's a great format for that kind of genre.
Yeah. And honestly, if they're going to deal with a story that has a, you know, lens towards prejudice in society and living, we live in a society type stuff, then a cop movie is a pretty good way to do it. So many for adult buddy cop films or dramas, or like most Dirty Harry films, they will put him with somebody who is like, you know, a black man or a woman. Yeah. And that will then, you express the tensions in society through these two cops working together. And usually it will end with an idea of like, and then they overcame their differences because we're human beings who can learn and change.
And you learn that you never touch a Fox man's radio.
Right.
But no, yeah. This is essentially 48 Hours, the 1982 film 48 Hours, except the fact that Judy Hopps is not constantly saying slurs.
Right. Yes. It was funnier back then, apparently, to hear slurs.
Yeah. Out of Nick Nolte's mouth, of all people. So yeah, that's exactly what we're doing here. This is essentially 48 Hours, where it's like a cop has to team up with a criminal to solve a greater mystery, and they have to overcome their differences, blah, blah, blah. So it has been done before. There were so many buddy cop movies at a certain point, the critic did their own like joke about how like there are all these mismatched partners, and like there's a kid, there's a dog, there's like a mannequin. I forget. There were so many of them in that sketch.
There is a leprechaun who says, "I'll be your lucky charm," and then explodes. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a like, we're not getting them as much anymore. But yeah, it was a very viable movie type for about 20 years. So, yes. This is when Wreck-It Ralph director Rich Moore enters the picture. So his involvement was announced in 2015, and the film was originally announced in 2013. He was brought on when the film was in serious need of retooling around 2014. Now keep in mind, this film releases in 2016. They're making some late changes to the movie. And it's not just Rich Moore who jumps on board. Phil Johnston also jumps on board. And we talked about him last month because he is the co-writer of Wreck-It Ralph. So if you want to know more about Rich Moore and Phil Johnston, check out Wreck-It Ralph. But hey, we also talked about Rich Moore cumulatively probably for 6 hours across our 11 years of doing these podcasts together.
Yeah, and I mean, just next week on What a Cartoon, we'll be talking tangentially about Rich Moore again on our What a Cartoon subject. And I guess this explains why it took a lot of years for a Wreck-It Ralph sequel to happen, because they were busy saving Zootopia.
And then they make Wreck-It Ralph 2. So ultimately, yeah, we got Zootopia out of it. That's fine. I like that movie. I like this movie twice as much as I like Wreck-It Ralph. Or excuse me, Ralph breaks the internet. Not even wrecks the internet, right?
Yep. Yeah. But Bob, if you don't like that title, they make a joke about it in the movie. So it's okay to have a bad title if they joke that it could have been better in the movie.
I didn't know that was the rule. I apologize. So let's talk about the retooling of Zootopia. They have their idea. It starts in a much different place, and then people are brought on to change it. Let's talk about that original idea that I kind of want to see this movie, by the way, but we're never going to see it. So this is a successful retooling. Disney is not shy about sharing the details when things go the right way and a movie makes $1 billion. A lot of these stories we don't know, but they're proud to share this one. So in November of 2014, fairly late in production, or at least too late to commit to huge fundamental changes, the team realized they need to flip their primary and secondary characters completely for the film to make sense, because originally the film began with Nick Wilde as our lead character. And the big issue is, this is a story about overcoming prejudice, and ultimately, it's not going to be as effective if you start from the POV of a character who is already too jaded and worn down by this world to believe that change can happen. So here's a quote from the director, Byron Howard, about the change. Quote, "The character that's going to help us tell that message is Judy, an innocent, who comes from a very supportive environment where she thinks everyone is beautiful, everyone gets along. Then let Nick, this character who knows the truth about the world, bop up against her and they start to educate each other. When we flipped that, it was a major flip, but it worked so much better." So, yes, this was a Nick Wilde-driven movie. And frankly, folks, I like that character a lot more. Judy Hopps is a little too Leslie Knope for me in this movie.
It was the Leslie Knope time. It's how like she was one of the most popular TV character. She was showing us how great it was going to be when a Leslie Knope was going to get elected. Or, well, I like the Leslie Knope character, and I think a mistake that people who wrote Leslie Knope is that they thought that Hillary Clinton was Leslie Knope, but she is very much not that.
Yes, yes. And I kind of want Judy Hopps to be voiced by Amy Poehler, no offense to the woman who voiced her, but I, for the longest time, I assumed she was. But then I'm like, well, no, they had her voice Joy in Inside Out, so they're not going to be, they wouldn't be that redundant with their voice casting. Yeah. So one of the massive ideas that was dropped from this initial idea for Zootopia is the idea of the tame collar. So essentially, predators were forced to wear these shock collars that would electrocute them if they became agitated. And one of the tent poles of this version was a scene in which we see the birthday party of a little polar bear. He's 5 or 6 years old, and his coming of age ceremony is he gets his first tame collar. And the little kid is very excited, like, oh boy, I get to be just like everyone else. But the dad, putting it on his son, knows, well, your life ends today. This is the beginning of a very painful life for you. So it was underlining the fact that, like, this is injustice, this is unfair, but this is the world these predators have to live under. And it was a much darker story. But ultimately, they thought, if you see this, you're not going to like Zootopia. You're going to despise this place, and you won't think it can change. My own take is this could have been a great PG-13 movie that could have said some even deeper things about racism and the actual, like, physical effects it can have on people. They're hurting the persecuted class. They're, like, literally electrocuting them in this case, instead of just kind of being rude to them, you know?
Yeah. No, that's, that sounds like an incredible scene that would really set the tone for a different movie than this, but it is not the tone that Disney wants to sell or will make $1 billion. But, like, yeah, that is allegorically, that is so representative of, like, being a minority in America in many ways. But, like, I think of, it reminds me of a story I read about how for an African-American child, one thing you learn growing up is, like, don't play with fun water guns because you might just be shot because the cops will think you're holding a real gun and kill you. Like, you're not allowed to have that fun. Like, that's just one of the many, many, many weights you feel on top of you. And if you see that, you're like, boy, this society sucks. If you see that in Zootopia at the start, and you might think, wait, does my society suck? Is it pretty shitty in my world?
Yeah, yeah. It's really, it goes a lot further, but I think it would have been more effective. I know this would have made for a darker movie, but I kind of want a darker animated movie. Let's go there. But ultimately, like, again, this story about bias and prejudice is kind of flawed, because ultimately the worst thing that happens to Nick is people make assumptions about you. And if you go to an ice cream store and you're trying to run an obvious scam, they might be a little rude to you there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely is this question of, honestly, it has a few moments in it that remind me of a much worse movie, Crash, the Oscar winning best film. But there's in the character of expressed through Ludacris's character, his character assumes it's so a nail on the head, obvious, that bad movie. But his character intro scene is that he tips poorly because he felt he got bad service, because he says that the waitress assumed he was going to not leave a tip. So then he didn't. And it's a statement about fulfilling a stereotype because you're mad that people are going to assume it about you. And that is what Nick goes through in the story, too.
Yeah, yeah. It's approaching, you know, it's approaching the topic, but it doesn't really want to jump into it. It's a little afraid. And then, again, I don't want to go too far into this. I don't want to be a bummer. This movie is meaning well, it was made at a different time. But also, they bring in sensitivity experts and stuff to work on the movie. But then when it comes time to talk about what the movie's about, they don't want to talk about this stuff. They're like, oh, you know, just a story about a cop, but, you know, she's learning stuff about the world. Duh, duh, bip, bip, bip. We're going to talk about the Zootopia. Let's not talk about the other stuff. Like, it feels like when you're in the games press and you're like, well, this game tackles racism. What do you think? Oh, I think the player should decide.
Yep. Yes, we heard that. We heard that so many times. Nobody wanted to make a headline with that stuff. It's like, well, then don't be a cat. Like, then at least don't agree to interviews. Just say, then don't promote your game. I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, unlike today, I think it was fairly popular to say, yes, this movie is a movie about the dangers of racism. But if you look at the coverage, maybe they hint at it here and there. But if anyone wants to talk about it, they're like, we think the story comes out of the characters. They're very worried about the thing they made.
you know, they leave it to Vox.com. They know they'll just write about it, or the Atlantic will. There'll be articles back then by the article mongers, as Felix Biederman. I love that term Felix Biederman made up.
The article industrial complex, yes, which I don't think is really still around as much as it was in 2016.
Well, The Atlantic is mainly just some all right movie reviews and then justifying genocide. Yes,
it's David Sims and The Case for Genocide, Part 43.
Yes. You can legally kill a child in war, you know, article number 12.
I'm going to say, David Sims, you can leave The Atlantic. You guys are doing great. It's fine.
Yeah. Don't wait for them to lay you off from The Atlantic, yeah. David.
Frankly, it seems stressful. I just hang out with Griffin and talk about movies for 5 hours at a time.
Yes.
There's an arms race now. I mean, we're not even in the same leagues in terms of popularity, but Blank Check is regularly putting out 4-hour episodes. We need to step up our game. These are their regular weekly episodes too.
You're right. I take on that challenge. I'm going to try to up our regular Simpsons ones. Mm-hmm. We'll get Griffin on and see if he can get us. We'll try to get Griffin on again and see if he can get us up to a 4-hour Simpsons.
Five. We're going for five.
Five. Okay. We can do it. I know we can.
So, yes, this is a massive change. We're getting rid of Nick as the POV character. We're losing the tame collars. And if you go onto the DVD or on Disney Plus, you look at the deleted scenes, a lot of them are of Nick suffering with the collar attached to his neck. It was going to be a very dark story. Again, kind of want to see that one. I did like what they eventually made, but I think it would have been more effective with that part of it. But unfortunately, they didn't do that. But despite making this change so late in production, this film still had an average budget, like a very average budget of $150 million, which is not insane for one of these movies. Things like Tangled will end up costing more than $200 million because of all the retooling they had to do with that movie. So this is basically your standard price at the time for a Disney CGI feature.
It's also funny, this comes up so many times, of how almost every Disney movie we cover goes through like at least one massive change, if not two or three. And Byron Johnson, he's now on the other side of it. He was the director of Bolt, but Bolt started as a Chris Sanders movie that got like heavily retooled. He exits Disney when Lasseter gets put in charge, around when Lasseter gets put in charge, and then Byron takes over it and it becomes Bolt. Now his thing is getting changed big time.
Yeah, I don't think we'll cover Bolt. I don't know if I ever want to see it. It made a lot of money, but essentially Bolt is, what if Buzz Lightyear was a dog? It's about a dog who is an actor. Yes. On a superhero show, who thinks he actually has the powers, and like antics ensue from there.
Played by the new great film artiste, John Travolta.
We've seen his beret.
Yes, I do love his, you know what, his new, make me think about things that aren't allegations about you or Scientology. Just let's think about that beret. It's a fun new character.
I think his life picked up ever since he visited r/bald and leaned into it.
It's true. He's been bald. I think it was one of the podcasts where I guys related this about him, that like he hung out with Pitbull, the recording artist Pitbull, and he's like, you know what, I want to be bald like him now. I'll be honest.
This is not meant to shame him in any way, but I think he has been bald for at least like 35 years.
Yes. Yeah. He just stopped at a certain point in the last like 10 years. He stopped wearing wigs in movies as much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yes, this means a lot of content had to be cut from this original version of the movie. Most of the content that was cut is characters that gave Nick a hard time and just were there to underline how his life was difficult in Zootopia. So a few notable omissions from the cast. We have the Gerbil Jerks. These were two trust fund gerbils who zoomed around in a sports car. Apparently a big hit with test audiences. They did not make the final cut. They were there to harass Nick. We have the Razorbacks. They're an elite police force, also known as the Sniffers, because of their powerful tracking abilities. There was a villainous sheep named Wooly, who was able to disguise himself as a wolf. So he was literally a sheep in wolf's clothing. That was the working device. He had like a corset he could pull and then like kind of transform himself into a wolf.
Boy, that is funny. It's the reverse of like the Ratigan character or other ones in movies we've seen. That's clever, though. I guess they did stick with the idea of not trusting sheep so much in this film, though.
That's true, but sheep detectives prove that they will solve your murder if you are their farmer.
You can trust them as long as it's not Jenny Slate.
Yes. And then we also have Old Goat, who was an ancient meter maid that was meant to be a preview of what could be Judy Hopps' future if she did not climb up the cop ladder. And then Honey, she was a honey badger doomsday prepper who was afraid that sheep were going to take over the world. And that character eventually turns into the honey badger scientist who is working with, I believe, the mayor late in the movie.
The J.K. Simmons Lion Mayor. Yeah, that character. That's funny. The I like that. Doomsday Prepper would have been kind of fun to see in the movie, and predictive of, like, well, Doomsday Prepping was at a big height during the Obama era. A lot of people spent a lot of money on being prepared for when the first black president would destroy America, mm-hmm. obviously. Yes.
And they added a lot of the most popular scenes in the movie thanks to this new focus on Judy. So we have the DMV scene with the sloths. That's new for the Judy stuff when the focus is on Judy. We have the Naturalist Club, and we have Mr. Big, which allowed Maurice LaMarche to dust off his Godfather impression. And this is fine. This is fine. This stuff, the Godfather stuff. But Henry and I grew up in the 90s. How many cartoons had their Godfather parodies? Like the God Pigeon.
Yeah. Yes. So many Godfather, like at least the Good Feathers in Animaniacs got to combine it with the relatively recent Goodfellas movie then, but Goodfellas. But in this case, yeah, it's just, it is the 1972 film is being parodied in 2016 with, I guess it is slightly refreshed by having Jersey Shore style yes. jokes in there too.
It's like, yeah. What if the Godfather's daughter was Snooki? And that's the working yes, joke here. Yeah. And yeah, I guess Snooki was not too far in the rear view. We remembered her in her big hair and her tracksuits and whatnot.